We begin our class this morning wanting to have a foundation or a point of view of how we are looking at this. For soul evolution and karma, what is their relationship? In the Western mind, we see evolution from material substance into higher forms. But in Theosophy, it's stated that we are spiritual beings. We are beings of light. That the entire universe exists for the experience of this soul. That we are here for a purpose. And we have chosen that purpose. We have accepted our karmic duty to lift up all of life to higher states of consciousness. And that higher state of consciousness is exemplified in the heavenly man. Now, what we see presently in man is on a journey to become that complete and perfected being after many ages of pain and sorrow. So, we are told that every atom or every form on earth and every speck strives in its effort toward self-formation to follow the model planned for it in the heavenly man. So all of life is moving toward perfection or perfectibility. This is soul evolution. It is not the evolution of the physical matter, but that is included. We are told that we have descended as light into matter, and that matter has reached its limit or its bottom. And from this point, the light is traveling back into spirit. We are told that we are living in a certain time, in a certain age, and that we are in the fourth round, in the fifth race of the fifth sub-race. And that we are traveling forward. Soul is moving or moving back toward spirit. So man is experiencing right now this evolutionary process. But how is this evolutionary process brought forward? Well, that is through our karma or karmic influences. Man, or we, are presently enjoying the karma of a past life, or perhaps some of this life, but it's that karma which is being expended at this very moment. But we are told that there's karma that it cannot be expended at this moment because the circumstances are not correct. It cannot express itself, and it's held back. And then we are told that there's another kind of karma that we are presently making, and that too will be stored and held. So karma is the moving factor in our life, cause and effect. Every cause has an effect. Every effect has a cause. But karma is this ceaseless motion, this great breath that took place at the very beginning of our manifestation or our coming forth from spirit. There has always been this vibration. And this has brought us to where we are now. So where are we now? Well, we are in our soul evolution, self-conscious beings. But are we self-conscious of our true being? We are self-conscious of the world around us. Are we aware of our divine essence? The Gita calls it our higher self, that discriminating principle. So the self-consciousness has to achieve its own freedom. And that's what we are trying to do. We are trying to act as if we were that principle of self-consciousness. That self-consciousness which is ever the witness to the change. So this becomes our reality, the ever eternal, but the ever present. So how do we, through enduring karmic influences, change the destiny that we have laid out before us? Because it is only pointing in a direction, but we as self-conscious beings can make a choice. And when one becomes aware that what he sees is not what he is, what he feels is not what he is, one begins to act in a different way. One's character begins to change. One's life becomes filled with virtue. That's not saying that it's a conscious act, but virtue is a loving act. It's the loving that we feel for our mother, for our family, for our brothers and for our sisters, for those that are close to us. But we are capable of expanding that love to include more than those around us, but to include the entire world and the entire universe. We are that great. We do that by opening the heart. And by opening the heart, we change our character. Because we begin acting from a different place. So the self-conscious witness has to educate themselves again. We have to remind ourselves of who and what we are. And that is a process. You know, through love, We see that we are not separate from others. Through our harmony in our word and our acts, we bring things closer towards us. We learn patience, that nothing happens immediately, but takes indifference to pleasure and to pain, and to walk that middle path. But when one reaches this point, there's this energy of one's identity with that universal oversoul, which we are all part of. That we can achieve through meditation and concentration, or another way of putting it is compassion and mercy. To reach that highest state of self-consciousness on this plane, that is our goal. Where are we now? Well, it's said that we live our life, we die, our lower passions and desires and are dissolved or go back into their constituent parts and nature. And the real being, that mind, that Buddhi nature, or that oversoul, and that spark itself of Atma, goes into a place of rest. That's our true self. And there lives out an immensity of time. Those ideas and things that it strive for, or it is ideal, was placed upon. And after that has dissipated, is drawn back into life again to take up the task once more. And what is attracted back to him are those same tendencies that he left in his past life. They don't disappear. They're electromagnetic connections. Electric magnetic connections that we have made through our mind and through our heart. So we as spiritual beings are trying to influence all of life. But first we have to influence ourselves. We have to be aware that our karma is displaced in three different ways, on three different planes. And that we see it in our physical nature. We see those with limitations and those with very little limitations on the physical plane. And we also find that in our soul nature, in our psychic nature, in our feeling nature, also is another avenue of karmic influence. And then in our intellectual and our mental nature, our mind nature. So we have all these influences coming towards us. So how is a spiritual being to navigate the seeming chaos? Well, the seeming chaos has order. And we're told over and over again that there is a plan, that there is an intelligence that pervades this entire universe, and that all life is intelligence. And this light, this intelligences have been animated by this self-conscious being. We have to remember how powerful we are. Well, we know how powerful we are, but we dare not admit it, because we would have to be responsible for all the acts, thoughts, and words that we have spoken in the past, for they follow us into the future. But the only way we can break that cycle is through renunciation. You take up that path for the benefit of not oneself, but all selves. Take up that path of pain and suffering, for it is the ignorance that pervades the world in which we live. It's that path of bringing light in the darkness and sacrificing the personal self for that higher self. That's the path of many of our great teachers, Buddha, Krishna, Jesus, a selfless service to humanity. That is our soul evolution. Our karma is where we find ourselves right now, right this second, with all these streams of karma influencing us. How do we stand out and be separate? It's the realization that we are not what we see. We are not what we feel. We are more than that. We are told to look within, for thou art Buddha. Search out in the recesses of the heart for that quiet witness to all that lives. Search out that calmness. Search out that voice in the silence. We do this by living our life now, by ever trying to elevate life to a higher state. As the Dalai Lama says, be kind. And as all doctrines say, love. Love one another. And that will put us on the path to educating our mind and our heart to the true reality of why we are here, why this evolution is taking place. There's a few thoughts that we think, or we hope, have prompted some consideration on your part. Many of these ideas are not taught in the public square. That's why we have to come together where these ideas can flourish and expand. So if we have any questions, any statements, we'll entertain them now. SL?
It was mentioned about the character and how we reach a certain point through our choices that we feel that character. influencing us for good, for virtue. Is there a karmic enduring, is there an enduring karmic influences that affects our soul of evolution? If recognizing that influence, feeling that voice, we self-consciously choose to ignore it or fail to try to live up to it. What is the enduring karmic effect of failing to live up to our highest inclinations once we recognize what we are?
Well, we think you're bringing on to our conversation that voice of conscience that is that enduring karmic influence, that voice of conscience which we all have, which we, as if we listen to, we feel elevated. When we don't listen to it and we ignore it, somehow we feel deprived, that we have not fulfilled something, that there is a ideal image of what we are and what we can be. And if we do not live up to that, what is that enduring karmic influence? Well, what is the world that we live in today? We haven't taken responsibility for the karmic actions of our own life. We're told in the Gita, you know, we are compelled to act. So where are our actions focused? We're focused on selfish things for ourselves. And Krishna says, open your heart up and work for everyone, for all of humanity. You know, work for tomorrow. Work for yourself as another being in a future time. But ever keep striving to recognize our unity. How can we hurt something else or someone else if we think they're part of ourselves? That brings up a feeling within us, and our conscience talks to us when we do something that is unkind, unhelpful, even decisive. But we have grown to the point where we don't listen to it. We won't even talk to it when we've been done things that we are ashamed of. It only takes time for us to realize how shameful we've been. I don't know if that helps in any way. Is there any follow-up? Yes, SL?
We were just wondering that following karmic causes, you know, if we act in the voice of the silence, if it says if we act rightly, that follows us. It builds cities, yes, spiritual strength for the future. So it seems the opposite's true. If we morally choose, for whatever reason, not to follow what we know to be higher, then in our next life, and perhaps for several lives, we find ourselves morally bankrupt, less able to do that. It looks like we go on a slippery downward slope.
Yes, I mean, we build up tendencies in this life. You know, they're in the philosophy, they're called skandhas, but they're electromagnetic threads that we have to nature. We build up an affinity to these lives so that when the body perishes, these lives still exist. But again, electromagnetic impulses that have our impulse, that go back into nature. So when we come back into life again, we pick up those tendencies over and over again. And if we defile them, they come back to us in that defiled way. But if we elevate them, they will come back to us in an elevated form. Yes, MHW.
When we first saw the title of this lecture, Enduring, we weren't quite sure which version of the word was being used. So we looked it up, and enduring means something that lasts a long time. It's an adjective, whereas to endure is a verb meaning to be able to tolerate and suffer through something. So what it's interesting because both of the words would fit. And enduring in the lecture idea has to do with, you know, the karma lasting over a long period of time. Whereas to look at the term endure means to be able to tolerate it, to be strong to it. And that's what karma is actually doing for us, is making us able to endure the thoughts, the feelings, the actions that we are doing. And it's helping us to get stronger in order for the soul to evolve. So we just thought it was interesting that both of the words, I'm guessing the root is probably the same. Well, it must be the same for both. But it was just kind of fun to kind of figure out how the two of them would fit together. And we are enduring I'm using the word endure. We do endure the results of our actions so that we can be stronger for our karma to assist in the soul's evolution.
You know, here we are in this mansion of pain and sorrow and death. Okay? We all are. We live with it. Is that not enduring? Is that not enduring? Is that not wanting to elevate ourselves to a higher state of consciousness? To elevate those around us and life around us? You know, if you're going to endure something, it's like the voice of the silence says, you know, how do you endure the pain and suffering? It's through renunciation of the fruits of one's actions. Renunciation of our selfishness. And strive to be unselfish, let alone selfless. We have those ideals, again, back to our conscience. We are enduring because we know that there's something greater than what we are seeing and what we are doing. There's something greater going on. And if we let our minds be consumed with mere material science, we are sometimes put off that it's everything is so limited. It's very interesting, like this Wednesday, our class, we're taking up cycles and periods of time, and you know, in our studies, time is, we measure time by a few thousand years. But if we look at our studies for this week in the ocean, time has been kept for millions, trillions of years. There's records by great beings of that march of time. On the ceiling of the Dendidran temple in Egypt, there's three sidereal years that are mapped out on the ceiling. Well, sidereal year is what? I forget the exact, 2,843? 25,000 years. So we're talking about 75,000 years. And so we have to look at that, look at our life, look at karma, look at soul evolution in terms of this idea of time. Yes, JCS.
Well, I'm chuckling because when I was preparing for this morning, my mind went to duration, endurance, and time as well. And I started playing with numbers. In the philosophy is the proposal that man's self-conscious entity has been on the spiritual and physical scene for 18 million years. And if we take that as an average of 1,000 to 1,500 years between incarnations, then the average number of incarnations for any one of us is anywhere from 12,000 to 18,000 periods of activity since 18 million years ago. And if we turn it another way and think about the potential to live 100 years, 100 years turns out to be 876,000 hours. And we know that these numbers can be staggering. And if we follow the path of Aristotle, we can get lost in all these huge numbers and the details that they promise that we have to endure. But if we follow the reasoning of the Platonic school and think about universals and oneness, we really only have one moment in which we are active in all these periods of endurance. And that one moment is spiritual, isn't it?
Yes. That one moment is now. Yeah. And that's all there ever is now. You know, and our mind can take us into the future or into the past. You know, it's so fleeting. So it's, time gives us a perspective, you know, and it broadens our horizon. For we came from a world in which the idea of who man was and who man is was hidden from us. And only the priest could be the intermediary between us and God. You know, we have no intermediary. We are. We can connect with that God or that higher principle in ourselves. And we have that ability. This self-conscious being has the ability to reflect. So we reflect on time. We reflect on our actions. We reflect on our very being. That is being self-conscious. So how do we act from that self-reflection? Do we add it to our knowledge? Do we add it to our understanding? You know, do we keep on reminding ourselves all day long that I'm not the body. I'm not these emotions. I'm not these circumstances. I'm not them. I'm witnessing them. I'm a witness to them. I only am attached to the feelings, to the ideas.
Well, we have heard the terms creation, preservation, destruction, and regeneration. And it's our understanding that as human beings, we are really creators, destroyers, regenerators, but preservation of ideas. And that gives us a greater power as self-conscious human beings. Creation, preservation, destruction, and recreation. So that's true. Everything. Like an automobile, we have an objective point of view and also a subjective point of view. And when we're out of sight, we know that we have a preserved conception of automobile. Right away, we become more aware of our aim and our purpose to help nature in her course.
You bring up
what a wonderful, shall we say, insurance.
Well, you bring up a very good point. You know, that we as human beings are that Godhead of the Hindus, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. We are the embodiment of that. We are creators of the world in which we live. We are destroyers of the world which we live, but we are also the preservers of it. So this is going on constantly all around us. Without destruction, there can be no new growth, no new creation. An idea that we must also consider. SL?
Before it was mentioned that we as spiritual beings are born in this mansion of suffering, sorrow and death, suffering, pain and death, and certainly to live a long life, very long life, may be good karma to live in a life relatively free of suffering and pain, may be good karma. But are they any reliable indicators of the degree or the progress of the incarnated soul witnessing that as to their state in soul evolution? Does the outward reflect accurately the inner status of the being in soul evolution?
Well, one can never know where another being is on this evolutionary path. That the soul is a... could you repeat that question? I mean, I'm not quite sure.
Does the outer experience of whether we live a long life or favorable circumstances, relatively free of suffering and pain, while they may be good karma in this life, do they tell us, do they give an indication of where the soul is at this time in their path of soul evolution?
Well, there's three streams of evolution. We may have a good karma when it comes to the physical plane. We may live a long life and relatively little pain and suffering. But there also is that psychic karma, that moral karma, and also that intellectual or that mind karma. So we do not know what anyone else or where anyone else is in this evolutionary path. We only know that we see death and we want to live a long life. But in that living that long life, one sees all that they've loved and they've cherished die before them. That is one of the things that living a long life gives you. And to some, it is a pain to live through that and experience that. You know, you're living that pain of not being in someone's presence.
What is the term?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. CBW, go ahead.
Anyone else? Maybe he'll be back on in a second.
He's muted right now.
Well, that in each life we build up affinities and these electromagnetic connections. This philosophy is one of those connections. It has an electromagnetic charge. And that our minds are able to connect to. So, we study this together and in hopes of elevating the world around us, whatever that world may be, our friends, our family, or even just to be a better human being. Okay. Well, if we measure success and degree of conversation, we may not be very successful today. We should like to spark questioning and ideas. Yes, SL.
Well, the enduring effect of conversation is the thought, the endurance of the thought that it leaves with us. Yeah. So we might say we can speak a lot of words, but unless it endures in the minds and hearts of ourselves and others and has practical bearing, it is not successful. So we don't want to judge that. We do notice that CBW is unfortunately being sometimes open and sometimes muted, so we don't know whether we're going to have a chance to hear that contribution.
Well, that gives someone else an opportunity. Well, you know, this is the enduring karmic influences are what we're living now. Those effects that are coming to us now, these are the enduring karmic influences. So how we can, through self-reflection, use these karmic influences to aid us in our journey. You know, that karma, I think was stated, is the universe saying, hey, I'll pay attention to this. There is something here that is not in harmony. So we are constantly given reminders and proddings of the things that we need to bring into our scope of attention. SL.
To go back to the idea of the experience of death and its relationship to whether it is good or evil, its karmic consequence on soul evolution. As we understand in that higher after death state, it is not just a period of rest, but assimilation into our immortal character of the karma of all the good deeds and good thoughts and spiritual ideas that we've had. So life, as what we know of life as well as death, plays a very important role in the enduring aspect of karma on our future lives. It's the opportunity for us to assimilate and build up those tendencies which we will bring forth with us in the future.
And no, there is not a wasted thought or feeling. You know, ever striving to find the highest and embody that. That's why in the voice we see the virtues as a means to an end, not an end in itself. So, we've come to the hour. We hope that these have stimulated some kind of questioning in your mind or thoughts that you could bring into the week ahead. So, a safe journey into the week, and peace be with everyone. Meeting adjourned.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.